Hello and welcome to Andy and Mary Geek Out.
It's Mary and Andy Geek Out.
Why isn't that alphabetical?
I did it because of the. It sounds better when you shorten it. Like, it'd be like AMGO, or in this case, it'd be MAGO. I thought it would work better. Anyway, so welcome back to another episode. As you can tell from the title, we're doing things a little bit differently. Usually we like to do like a little break in between the seasons of Teen Titans that we've been watching and talk about something else, because that's not the whole point of our podcast, is to talk about just Teen Titans, but things that we like in general. And we figured we'd do our first kind of review on a recent video game.
And by review, we mean we are going to talk about everything. So if at any point you think, oh, this sounds good, I should play it, then leave and play it before we spoil everything.
Yeah, so the game that we're talking about, I guess I should have just mentioned that, is Bug Fables.
It's probably in the title.
It's in the title, but we didn't say the name out loud yet.
Yes.
Bug Fables came out last year in 2019 on computer, and then came out this year, 2020, on the home consoles. I kind of heard about it before it was released. Like, it was kind of like, oh, it's a new, it's stylized to be like a Paper Mario, like, kind of game.
And if you like Thousand Year Door, and what's the first one?
Just regular Paper Mario.
Regular Paper Mario, and you feel like the games after that are not what you wanted from Paper Mario, this is probably what you wanted from Paper Mario.
Yes, I agree 100%. What tipped me off was another big Paper Mario fan, the YouTuber Arlo, the Blue Puppet, who kind of got his start on making Paper Mario videos. And he reviewed this game, and he gave it a glowing review. And I thought, well, if Arlo likes this, then I should probably play this as well, because I definitely value his opinion on Paper Mario. And it turns out he was right. I do enjoy this game a lot. Overall, it has some issues in terms of, like, the platforming.
It wasn't made for that.
Yeah, the platforming is definitely its weakest part. But everything else it has really is kind of nails really strongly.
Where it is actually better than Paper Mario is in characterization. There is no silent protagonist. You have three main protagonists, and they all talk.
Yes, that is honestly something that I'm really happy about that this game does. As I definitely agree with you 100%, because in the other games, it would basically be your tattler, your, in this case, Goombario or Goombella, and they would be commenting on just random people or random scenery, and they'd be the only ones making the comments. It's very rare for the other supporting characters to talk much about the scenery, and even then, it's done during a cutscene, and that's it.
I will also say I think the just having three characters is a good call, because if they went with the full character depth to any more characters, then you'd feel like you were missing out.
Mm-hmm.
Or you'd constantly be switching and just stuck in one place forever because you wanted to hear what everyone said.
Yeah, I think they kind of, it's funny because they kind of alluded to it, because initially it was Kabu that would comment on the scenery. And after the first boss battle, the Leaf and V kind of commented to Kabu about, like, you don't have to comment on every of the scenery. And Kabu's like, but I'd like to. And then they all kind of get in on it, and it's great just to hear everyone's opinions on it.
So Andy just listed the three main characters' names without actually introducing them.
We should probably talk about that, yeah. Go for it.
We start off with Kabu, who is, I think, a stag beetle or beetle?
He's like a rhinoceros beetle,
He's a green beetle with a horn. Mm-hmm. He's a noble adventurer. He's definitely the knight of the, you know, core RPG party.
Yeah.
He also is a huge tank. Sweetheart.
Yes.
He's very protective of his friends, very forgiving of his not friends.
Yeah, he is very sweet. That is definitely his, like, strongest characteristic. He's very forgiving.
A big fan of world travel.
Yes. The next one who joins Kabu is V. She kind of defects from the Beehive, which is very unusual for the Beehive to have any kind of defectors.
And because your destiny is basically on you from birth.
Yeah, and she kind of decided, like, no, I want to do my own thing. And so she decided she wanted to be an explorer because she just wanted to go fight and look for treasure. She loves treasure. That's my favorite part about V. It's just how consistent her character is in terms of her love for treasure. She originally starts off as like a big brat and just like...
Yes, anytime you helped anybody, she'd ask for a reward.
Yeah, which is kind of refreshing in all honesty. Instead of just having like that... Mod is like, you don't have to reward me, which Kabu always is. V is like, no, no, give us shit. I want that shit.
Yes. This is not a choose your own dialogue kind of game, which is to its benefit.
Yeah. And it's really nice to have that character there just like, no, just reward us, please. Reward us. Really nice to
like
have
like, we
that.
Didn't do this for nothing.
Yeah. Like, nice to have a character, like a protagonist that's not all like, you don't have to reward me at all. It's a good deed that counts. And Kabu fits that nicely, but V is like a great kind of like,
yes,
like antithesis. Foil. Yeah, foil for him.
And the third party member is the mysterious Leaf, who is a moth with ice magic.
Yes.
And he loves food and cute animals.
They.
No, he gets referred to as he.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
He refers to himself with the plural personal pronoun.
Right.
But in, like, all the writing about him, he's a he.
That's
I would have liked true. They, but...
Yeah, you know, they should have maybe, like, in a little update that make it...
I've seen a lot of people discussing it, and they have their own headcanons, and that's cool. And maybe he, like, once he comes to terms with his identity, he does change his personal pronouns, but he does not do that in the game.
Right. And, I mean, we talked about earlier... We're going to get into spoiler territory. So
yes,
like,
and we got into it real quickly, apparently.
A little bit, yeah. So I think this is like the last hard warning that, you know, if this, it's a really good game.
If you like Paper Mario, if you like world building based around bugs.
If you like any kind of world building, really. If you love...
If you like...
Quests. I love those quests.
I mean... Yeah, the quests aren't repetitive. That's another good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you take up a quest, it's not like, go do this, kill this many things. It's go help this person with an entirely different thing.
And like it can vary wildly.
And yeah, they play out in a lot of different ways, and the rewards are definitely worth it.
Yeah, we can talk about some of our favorite ones in a moment. Again, pause the episode now if you haven't played it. I'm sure you've heard a lot of people recommend it. But check it out. Come back to this timestamp and just listen from here.
All right. That should be enough time for you to have completed the game.
Yep. Speaking of which, this game... So it was mainly me playing it. And Mary watched me play it.
I'm very good at that.
She's very good. She's actually, I love playing video games with her because she's really good at commenting and helping me figure puzzles. Really good at playing, helping me puzzles. Like, not to get too off topic here, but when we play mystery games like Return of the Obra Dinn or Danganronpa or anything like that, Mary's really good at kind of like being like a second brain for me and just figuring out the puzzles and answering them. But that's not... The game here. This is something
it's real
else.
Sweet. Thank you for giving me credit for being a good backseat gamer.
So I played about 42 hours around that time frame. So I sunk a lot of hours into it. You could definitely play it for less, but I didn't do like 100% completion on it. But I got pretty close to it. I didn't want to look for all the library books because they're just scattered all over the place. But the lore is so good. I always like it. I know I'm tempted to go back and just find the rest just to look up the rest of the lore. But reading those books, the more you read into it, you're like, what is going on with this world? Because it's like painting it as really post-apocalyptic for humans. Like, it reminds me, what was it? What did it remind me of when I was playing it? Pikmin, that's right. It reminded me of Pikmin when...
Didn't Darlo make that comparison, too?
Maybe. He's usually good at, like, avoiding spoilers, so I think something like that may... Well, anyway, because there's constant use of, like, everyday household items in this game. And, like, the desert, the freaking desert is the best example. It's just a sandbox in the backyard, and I love it.
When you first get to the desert, there are, like, some hints that it's a sandbox. There's, like, a plastic toy rake, like, buried in the sand. There's
the red wall.
Yeah, the red wall. But you don't really fully get what's going on until you go up into the beehive in the tree and check out the whole area with a telescope, and you're like, oh, this is somebody's backyard.
Yeah, like, when I saw that, I instantly clicked in my head, like, oh, I see what's going on here. Because, I don't know, you played Hollow Knight, and that's another game involving yes. bugs. Would you say that took place in a human world or its own world entirely?
It's its own world.
Yeah. I kind of thought the same thing for this one. I thought this would be, like, its own world. But, no, it strongly hints that there's something human going on. And there's a lot of unanswered questions that I'm very curious to know the answer to.
And there are some lore books, I don't know about speculating, but that talk about when bugs were non-sentient, how they'd spend most of their lives as babies and have a brief adulthood, you know, like bugs in real life do. And
yeah, and they were like, it was called the awakening, where they would, they gain the ability to live longer in years, to communicate to each other. They became civilized. But then there's other insects and critters that weren't affected by the awakening.
And plants.
And plants that were like monsters.
Yeah. They became aggressive.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And then there's the whole end game, which was really freaky, to say the least. The giant slayer.
Talk about the very basic plot, which is find these artifacts to find this cooler artifact.
Yeah, it's a very MacGuffin-like plot, but, like, the way that the MacGuffins used are,
yes.
It kind of keeps you guessing a little bit.
Yes. The main characters are, a officially licensed explorer group that are working for the Ant Queen.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to find the Everlasting Sapling, which is rumored to, if you eat one of its leaves, make you live forever?
Yeah.
Or at least make you not die. Basically, I don't know if that was clear.
It's eternal life. They said the lore was eternal life.
Yeah, I wonder if that's true. Based on what I'm speculating here, but the roaches weren't immortal.
And no.
Supposedly they had access to it for a long time.
Well, it sounded like in the lab that they wanted to use other means for immortality besides
the
Everlasting.
Yeah, because the sapling didn't work, and why not? Or really? Were they expecting it to die? I mean, there weren't immortal roaches, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't know. It, like, that's another thing. It's like the roaches is kind of shrouded in mystery. And I love it how they initially, since roaches have that designation of the post-apocalyptic species, the last thing that will survive. In this case, it's the ancient race.
That disappeared.
And I love it. I think that's fantastic that it's like that's flipped on its head.
Yes.
Going back to the quest. So, as we mentioned, there's a lot of variety in the quest, which I love. And it seems like the rewards are different, the people are different, the what you need to do is different, and there's not a lot of fetch quests either, like, mm-hmm. It's all kind of variety, and what kind of helps this out is, like, first off, I absolutely love the quick travel system, like, it's super efficient, and it gets even more efficient as you progress in the game.
And it's well in-world explanation, which I always appreciate.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so it hits off both of those marks really nicely. And it's the ant tunnels, basically, as you explore each new area, they open up to you via the ant tunnels. And then, like, near the end of the game, you get the ant compass that'll take you back to the main ant tunnel, which is fantastic. And by then, I was just like zipping through all the quests because I could just hop back and forth between all the tunnels, which was awesome. And I really, it was really funny because one of the quests was the one with the moth in the Defiant Runt town.
And
she takes control of Kabu after V breaks
one of the
pots.
Somebody stole her silk.
That's what it was, yeah.
You go get her silk back from the bandits and bring mm-hmm. it back. And then V accidentally breaks one of her priceless pots.
Yeah.
And she mind controls one of the team members to fight you.
Yeah, which is like, oh, okay, here we go. Let's do this. So I really like that was twisted on its head. And things like that, little touches like that really kind of made it for me.
So it has the same as Paper Mario, the tattle system. It's spy in
this
case.
Mm-hmm.
And depending which character, all of the characters can do it. And depending which character does it, they say a different thing about the enemy.
Mm-hmm. And it keeps track of it, too. So even if it's, like, just V that spies it, it still puts the
log
in.
You can check your bestiary, and it shows what everybody would say about it.
Which is really nice.
Which is one of the main reasons we know Leaf loves little animals.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to say is you could use that, if you do, like, a Paper Mario-style Pokemon game, you could have the Pokedex as the spy.
Oh, as the spy? Yes.
Or the tattle.
Yes.
I think that would be cute.
I love the battle system, too. The battle system, because the Paper Mario games are great. I wouldn't say they're a difficult game. I would say they're more, like, average to, like, even, like, slightly below average until you get to the very end when you get some actually pretty difficult bosses. Here, though, there are some really, like, fun fights, and they can get pretty grueling at times, and it really made me, like, really happy to fight it, and, like, it really kind of made me plan. I loved, like, planning for it, and I'm one of those I'm one of those, like, players when you have items that give you, like, a good amount of health back or special points back, you kind of really hold on to it in case for an emergency. I'm like, but what is it if it's this emergency? And I end up using it anyway. But it's great. I love how difficult the battle prompts are, but at the same time, when you pull it off, you can get some great damage off the opponents.
Yes, it is fun, and I sometimes have input on Andy's strategies. There's, you know, a lot of things to consider, like the fighter you have out front will do more damage, but they're more likely to be targeted.
Yeah.
Or you can have one of your fighters go twice. Or, like, in Paper Mario, there are certain enemies that only certain attacks will hurt, so you have to decide who does what to help who goes first will depend who can attack next, you know?
Yeah, it's really well designed. And for me, for my strategy, I just sunk all my level up points, most of them, into medals. Like, at first and initially, it was just, like, between the team points and the HP, because you barely get any medals. But, like, halfway through the game, you start getting some actual good stuff. And so I'm like, okay, it's medal time. And so I barely leveled anything up, and I was just medal. And the thing that I did, which I really liked, was I put Kabu in front, and I gave him, like, the do-nothing badges, which, like, would increase his health, increase the TP, increase his defense.
And as long as he did nothing.
As long as he did nothing. And that was awesome because, you know, a lot of times there's flying opponents that he can't hit. So he's just going to do nothing. And it's great. And so that kind of helped me, like, survive battles and give back that precious TP that I wanted.
All right. I want to talk more about the characters because that's by far my favorite part.
Sure.
Each character has their own sort of personal quest, although Kabu's is not a side quest, whereas Leaf and V's are kind of optional.
Right.
Each character has their personal growth. V probably has the most, and Leaf and Kabu even comment on it, which I think is really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I like how that's just demonstrated really casually, like, in some comments, or sometimes, like, they'll look at V like they're expecting her to ask for money, and she's like, what?
I know, it's great. That's the nice thing about the dialogue boxes, is that sometimes you'll have the main character talking, and then you'll have, like, one of the side characters kind of, like, make a little comment.
Reaction or comment, yeah.
Yeah, and it's always, sometimes I would repeat dialogue trees just to see what they said, because it's really fun just to hear all the reactions to it. But yeah, V's growth is really nice, and I love how she keeps on, like, staying her, I want the treasure, I want the money kind of thing.
Yeah, she never really loses that.
Right.
Although they have, like, the most dramatic character growth when she's doing her personal quest.
With her sister, yeah.
Yeah, because when she first left the Hive, she got in a big argument with her closest sister, because technically they're all sisters, because right. This is a bee colony. With Kabu and Leaf encouraging her, she decides to try to, what's that word?
Make amends?
Yes, that's the one. And that's actually one of the most annoying quests.
Yeah.
And if you had tried to do it earlier, you would have spent even more money on it.
Yeah. So I'm glad I waited on that one.
Yes. But ultimately, it's one of those swap quests where it's like, yeah, I'll give you this if you give me this. And then the person who has this will give you it for something else.
It's a fetch chain. Or chain. I
forget what those are called.
I think it's called fetch chain quests where, like you get one thing for another person and so forth.
Maybe.
But yes.
Anyway, ultimately culminating in the last item you needed costing so much.
It was like 400 berries.
V barely thinks about it. Yeah. I mean, I'm operating on the assumption our listeners don't know about the currency in the game. 400 berries is a lot of berries.
Yeah.
V barely thinks about it and uses her own funds instead of the party funds.
Yeah, which is pretty fun. I was like, oh man, I gotta save up for that. And then B just pops them out of nowhere. I'm like, oh man, where'd you have this money hiding all this time? So, which is great because that was part of her skill. She has like secret stashes, like secret little pockets that where she would have items that she could heal players during the battle, which I liked.
Yes. Didn't use it a lot, but it was nice that it was there.
Yeah.
If only they increased TP or something.
Yeah. They use it way more. Her special one after the sister quest allows her to like
heal the whole party, isn't
heal it? Heal the whole party and give them to recover HP over a few turns. Mm-hmm. Like steady increase, which is pretty great. So that's V's. I want to get Leaf last because Kabu was more like a secret one because he would make hints and allusions to it, but like it was one of those things, it was like a facade. Like he always had like a face on like
cheerful and optimistic.
Yeah.
Loyal, but every now and then he'd make a reference to something bad out there.
Yeah.
And we know that he came from far away.
Right.
And also, Goddess is like, hey, why don't you tell your friends about your troubles? You might feel better.
Yeah, and Cobb's like, Yeah, Venus is really fun, funny character. I liked her. Anyway,
let's not explain that.
Also, I'm assuming that our listeners have played it by now.
I'm assuming that you didn't. So Venus is a goddess. That's about it. She's a flower who is worshipped as a goddess, and she helps you heal in random places.
Yeah, and she like there's a great quest for her like called like the Queen's. What is it? The Queen's Banquet, I think it's called, where you have to find the best foods out there and give it to her. And
yes.
That was a fun one.
Yeah, they have cooking, which, again, Paper Mario thing.
Mm-hmm.
There are three chefs throughout the lands,
mm-hmm.
and each has a food only they can make.
Yeah.
And one makes tangy berry carpaccio, which is the
TP one. Oh, sourest? No, it's never mind. It's the sourest, and that's
it's
HP.
The sourest.
Yeah.
Another makes a crispy donut, which is the sweetest. Mm-hmm. And then you bring them to this one guy, and he's like, I'm going to combine the sourest and sweetest foods. And somehow that makes ice cream.
And he does it through, like, in his pot of soup, pretty much.
Could be pudding.
Like, he throws the carpaccio in the pot, yes. And then he throws the crispy
a berry
donut.
And a donut into a pot.
Yeah, and he just stirs it up. And I'm just like, all right, don't know how. It's really funny, because Crispy uses her oven to cook, bake, and fry things. So then you get. So, like, it's funny to get, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head. Smoothies. It's funny to get, like, fruit smoothies out of an oven. Crispy was, like, the MVP in this game because she has her, like, the honey and flour that she would sell next to her, which is great. And yes. Then there's an outdoor shop outside of her.
The ingredients that you need the most for cooking.
Yeah, and so I would just keep buying the honey and flour over and over and over again because that was, like, the best stuff ever to give to her. And like, I would just hold on to those crispy donuts all the time. Anyway, back to Kabu. Kabu's great because he has kind of, like, that hidden, like, baggage that, like, doesn't tell about. And I was like, what's his deal? And it finally came to fruition in the
swamp.
The swamp. The far grasslands. Where, like, his original master and friend got killed.
Where he is actually blinded by his need for revenge.
Yeah. I know, he got really intense, too. He's like, we gotta fight this monster because he killed my master and my friend. And we're gonna just kill it. And I'm like, holy shit. And it was just like, it was crazy to see Kabu like that. And then there's a moment where, like, I'm doing well. I'm whittling down the monster's HP. And then the monster does, like, a huge attack against V and Leaf, and they go down. And Cobb was like, no, not again! This can't happen again! And then he, like, does a super power-up and just starts wailing on the monster in the battle. It was great. I loved that scene.
Yes.
And then he basically gets closure at the end of the game where he makes a little memorial for them, which was really nice.
Yeah. That's post-game, actually.
Mm-hmm. And then the other main character, Leaf, like, his quest was, like, it took me way out there, and I was like, holy shit.
Leaf is discovered in the first dungeon, which has the ruins of roaches. He's in a spider web.
Yeah.
You rescue him, and one, he's, like, babbling some weird language.
Yeah.
He seems to understand the roach language. He was with a party that seems to have gone missing, and once you get him out of said dungeon, he finds out that he's been, like, in stasis or something.
He was dead.
Well, yes, I know.
Yeah.
Again, I'm operating on our listeners haven't played the game.
Right. I'm not.
but, yeah, he finds out a lot of time has passed since he fell down there. His quest is, first, he wants to see if his family's around, and there is a woman who looks remarkably like his wife, who might be his descendant. I was a little unclear on that.
Honestly, that was the part that I was unclear of, because he goes to this
Moth family
that kind of looks like his relatives, and he says, like, I think I'm related to you. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's really cool. Well,
come eat
with us. You can be our family now. And they're really accepting of it, too.
Yes. This weirdo. Yeah. I mean, he did save the world by the end of the game, so if they don't accept him then...
Yeah. By then, he was already pretty famous, like, explorer. Yeah.
Anyway, so his quest, one, he wants to see his family, but then he's like, never mind, I don't want to do this yet. So instead, you go find a secret roach lab underground.
Right.
And find out they were doing horrible experiments with sentient bugs that involved our favorite zombie bug maker, Cordyceps. Cordyceps?
I heard it both ways. I say Cordyceps.
Anyway, the zombie fungus.
Yeah.
It seems they were trying to find the secret to immortality.
And they would use...
Or maybe infuse magic?
Yeah, and they would use the Cordyceps as a way to, like, experiment with that.
Yeah, because they were trying to use it as an alternative to the sapling. That's the only reason I think it's for immortality and not, like, an army of zombies.
What's interesting about this is that the original perception of Cordyceps was it would...
take over the brain.
It would tell the ant, go up to the highest tree or whatever, and just latch your jaws onto the tree and then have the fungi explode out of the ant's brain. The modern conception of it now is that the fungi actually directly takes control of body parts, and the ant is conscious while it's doing so. And so it's interesting because...
It's way more horrifying?
It's way more horrifying, for one thing, that your body's being taken over and you can't do anything about it. But why I bring this up is that it actually lines in really nicely with bug fables in this world. Because then the Cordyceps here, like, I don't know, to me they seem like more actual, like, individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that they're actually in control of the bodies of the host. Which is why that reveal that Leaf is a combination of Leaf and the Cordyceps inside is pretty amazing to me. I really love that a lot.
Yes. For some reason, Leaf or his Cordyceps were special, and the memories of the host were retained.
Mm-hmm.
The Cordyceps that fused with Leaf were considered a failure. We don't actually know why, other than they were behaving weirdly.
Yeah. And this one was behaving weirdly, too. And apparently it was just hanging around in the tunnels for a long time and then stumbled upon Leaf.
It found Leaf's body in a spider web.
Yeah.
I think he might have still been alive at that point, but Andy thinks he was dead.
I think he was dead, in all honesty.
I just don't know how you'd get somebody's memories if they were already dead.
Right. I don't know.
Magic.
I, I would feel more, I should say I would feel more comfortable if they took over Leaf's body as when it was dead.
Because you don't need consent from a corpse.
I guess that's fair. But, like, I don't know, it just seems more...
Less creepy.
Less creepy, I guess.
I think of it as Leaf being as good as dead, but they might have been more clear and I might have missed a line.
But I like it, though. Like, the use of the Wii was came back great, and then all the hints in the game...
Sorry, you said the use of the Wii?
Word Wii, like we think this.
Yes, yeah, you gotta make Sorry. That clear, because it sounded like there was, like, a
The Nintendo Wii, yeah. Like, when the beehive scanned Leaf's body, and it was like, there's something weird going on. And then,
can we dissect you?
Yeah, and Venus was like, I sense...
I didn't sense you.
Yeah, she's like, I sense V and Kabu, but I didn't sense you, Leaf. And so all those kinds of hints like that was really, like, kind of leading up to something like, what is going on
with
him?
Just to clarify, the Wii thing is when, like I think I mentioned before, when they first wake up Leaf, he refers to himself as we, like, we were with our party here,
mm-hmm.
and we got attacked by a spider, and nobody questions it, so mm-hmm. nobody questions it.
Right.
But it turns out there was an actual explanation for it, and it wasn't just because he was using the Royal Wii. When he finds out what he really is, he starts having an identity crisis and starts using singular first-person pronouns.
Yeah, because then Leaf realizes that he's a cordyceps that's taken over a body, and so then he, like, switches back and forth for a little bit before he goes back to we, because then...
They're unified.
They're comfortable being each other. Like, Leaf has the memories of Leaf, but also has the memories of the cordyceps, and...
Yes.
It's very nice.
I haven't seen the movie Venom, but I assume it's like the movie Venom.
So the characters overall, all the side characters, I really began to enjoy a lot. Like, because you meet a whole bunch of them throughout your journey, and like...
some of them are more recurring than others.
Yeah. Like, the archaeologist, Neo, I thought would come back in a big way.
Yeah, because, one, he seems really important to Kabu.
Yeah.
But, like, he just ends up spending most of the game hanging out in the throne room.
Just analyzing the artifacts, yeah. It really was at the point where I was like, I think Kabu has a crush on Neo, because every time Kabu goes to a new, like...
archaeological site.
They're like, oh, I can't wait. I should bring Neo here. I think you'd find this great. And I'm just like, why don't you just date him already, for God's sakes? Like,
it's cute.
Yes. I liked it.
Kabu has a rich outer life.
Yeah, no, I feel like he's definitely, like, the social butterfly of the group. Like, he could definitely be friends with, like, everyone, and which is hilarious.
Yeah.
So Neo's, like, a smaller example. I'm thinking more of, like, Zasp and Mothava.
I was thinking of those two useless ants that I don't remember the names of.
Those two useless ant explorers are so funny. Like, we did something. We're not entirely useless.
Yeah, and there's a few explorer teams. And you mentioned the one that you face the most.
Yeah.
Mothava, who is a diva, and Zasp, who is her number one fan.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's great. I like Zasp. Zasp was one of those characters that grew on me because he's like, he kind of puts on a cold exterior.
He just has bad taste in women.
Yeah. And then you get Maki and Kina. And Maki serves as the Queen Elizan's personal bodyguard.
And is like the only male ant in the whole game.
Pretty much. And then Maki is joined by his sister Kina.
Who is weirdly possessive.
Yeah, it is. It's first it's like, okay, I guess, and then it just...
It's uncomfortable.
Yeah, like, her, like, obsession over her brother is like, you should probably, like, take it down a notch a little bit.
And, like, she's not made any more likable by the fact that Maki is, like, portrayed as hyper-competent and cool, and he's going off on his own quests, and...
He's leaving her behind, pretty much, which pisses her off.
Yeah.
And then, like, they pick up a caterpillar.
Maki picks up a caterpillar that has been a caterpillar longer than it should and only goes ma, and it's very uncomfortable for new reasons.
Yes. It's just so weird. I don't get it.
In the main game, this is not resolved. There's no reason for it to happen. It pays off end game, like post game.
Yeah.
There's a quest where she finally develops into a powerful magical moth, but even then we still have no idea why or what.
Yeah. I guess the reason why she was a caterpillar for so long was because she was didn't go to her special area. But that doesn't make sense because...
No. She pupates before that.
Yeah.
She was just, like, she was magical.
Yeah. Mary had a great idea that, like, she was possessed by parasites, which I was like, oh, that makes sense. Because what were you saying?
At least one kind of parasitoid wasp just lays its eggs in caterpillars, which instead of pupating, just keep eating and eating.
Yeah, which is horrifying.
Yes.
And so we were thinking like, oh shit, something's weird going to happen to Yin here.
Yeah, because the...
They take her to the giant's lair in the Forbidden Lands. And
yeah, and the main villain is a wasp. Well, not really, but...
Yeah, he's a fly. He's a fly that's pretending to be a wasp.
Yes, a wasp mimic.
Yes, which is great.
Okay, so you did find that out.
I did, yeah. And it's weird because it's like, why are you taking this, basically this child, this thing that can't even do anything, just like in this dangerous area? Why aren't you leaving this behind? It bothers me a lot. Like this.
And again, she's kind of creepy.
Yeah, she just says muh, muh all the time, and it's so weird.
And then to make it even more uncomfortable, Connie gets jealous.
Yeah, because Maki keeps looking after her because she's a caterpillar. And it's that whole business, that trio there is like one wrapped up weirdness ball.
Yeah, I want nothing to do with them.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know what is going on and what your hidden feelings are for each other, but you need to like settle this out. And it was weird. Like out of all, like I didn't get story wise at all why they would bring that caterpillar to the giant's lair. It just made no sense to me. Anyway, though, that aside, are there any other random characters you want to talk about?
One, I want to talk about the names, which range from puns to, you know, actual names. Like, Kabu is from Kabuto, right?
Yeah.
Leaf is a name.
I guess,
V, it turns out, is short for Violet.
But it's also, like, a clever, like, twist on B, because she's a B, so she's V, the B.
Yes, and then most characters you meet are going to be some pun or variation on what they are.
Yeah,
Nino is short for Neolithic because he's an archaeologist.
Oh, that makes sense. Elizant, like...
Yes, Queen Elizant.
Like Elizabeth, but in this case it's Elizant.
There's the baker, Crispy.
Crispy, yep.
The mantis who cooks by cutting things is just called Cut.
Cut, yeah.
The fly is called Fry.
Fry,
And my favorite is Bee that V suddenly really wants to be friends with, named Chubby.
Chubby.
Who is the cutest. And, oh man, I just realized the first time we face against Zasp.
Yeah.
Is in an eating contest.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's really funny.
That is weird. Yeah, the funny thing about this game, like a lot of games that it took me a while before I kind of got into it because it has like a weird, I don't know, I found it start to be a little bit awkward because you're just given V and Kabu, you don't have access to the main town yet because of road blockage and you gotta go into this cave. And so you're kind of thrown into it a little bit and you don't learn too much about the world. And I wish there was kind of a little bit more of that, like, more of that ease you into that world building aspect. But once I got out of Snake Mouth Cavern, then like I started playing this game more and more religiously because it's like, oh, okay, I get this now. This is fun.
I get it. This game is fun.
Yeah. Though the platforming puzzles I alluded to earlier, but like they can be a bit of a pain to get through.
Yes. They do the thing that Paper Mario does where there's, outside of battle abilities that the characters
use. Which I really
like. The thing is, sometimes the physics do not want to work with you on this.
Yeah.
There will be rooms where you gotta, like, put a little block and jump on it, and sometimes the perspective is weird, or sometimes
the
jump is weird.
Oh, the perspective always threw me off, yeah.
Yeah, the depth, it's, everything's flat, so depth can be a little bit weird.
Yeah. Thankfully, it's, the penalties
also, we played it on the Switch, and V has a boomerang throwing ability. Yeah. And Switches are notorious for drift issues.
Yeah.
So it makes it very hard to aim.
Yeah. So it was just trying to get her boomerang to line up was like, oh my God. Like, I remember I would, like, sometimes it would take me, like, 5 tries before I could
get the beamerang.
Beamerang, yeah, before I could get that beamerang lined up. It was, like, super frustrating. Thankfully, though, like, it has a low, low penalty system. Like, I think the creators knew that, like, yeah, this is a bit.
Yeah, if you lose a boss battle, it's like, you want to retry it? You want to retry it with different medals? Go ahead.
That's really nice.
Yes.
And then, but like the platforming, like if you fell off a platform or whatever, it takes you right back to where you once were. No HP lost.
Yeah.
No anything. And yeah, you can just try again. That'd
be way more frustrating if they did that.
So there's some anti-frustration features there. So I can't complain too much about the platforming. Because otherwise, I feel like...
But then you can make the argument... If they realized it was annoying, why didn't they just leave it out?
The other thing is that they were actually very forgiving, too, on some of their puzzles. Like, when you move the ice cube around, mm-hmm. like, sometimes it would overhang, like, a lot over the edge.
But not fall.
But not fall. And that's super nice, because then, like, sometimes if it over... Like, you know, in other games, if it overhangs, oh, that's not good enough, and it'll fall over. But this game, it's like, nope, if it's... As long as it's on... Part of it's on the edge, then you'll be good, so... Which I appreciate. This game also has, on like a grander scheme, like has a really nice difficulty curve that you can kind of set yourself for. Like you can put on hard mode or put on badges that like strengthen an enemy's attack or weaken your attack. So you can really kind of set the difficulty to what you want. And I basically played it on normal mode throughout the whole game.
I have heard rumor that hard mode is the intended mode when they were making it.
Huh. Well, if that's, I mean, I still enjoyed it. I felt like I got a good challenge out of normal, and I still got plenty of items after all the boss battles, so I could see myself playing. I think when I play this game again, I will do it in hard mode, now that I have a much better idea how to play it. But I just wanted to relax and have a good time, and so putting it on normal was just like that perfect, it was riding that great stress wave for me. That was just like, it hit that right difficulty curve. Yes. Which was really good.
Lord knows we need more things to be easy these days.
I think we hit all the big points off the top of my head.
I want to talk about the freaking Deadlands.
Yeah, okay, let's do the Deadlands then. Yeah.
So, once you find out that you are in a backyard, that's the point where you're like, okay, when are we getting in that house? The Eternal Sapling is, of course, in said house. And you have to go into the Deadlands, which I'm not quite sure where that was taking place. It looked like it might have been, like, between the shed and the house or something. I don't know. But anyway, the Deadlands are creepy as hell. There's a bunch of weird monsters. They don't look like any bugs. There is a giant eye that's constantly scanning the landscape. And when it sees you, a big hand appears out of nowhere to drop a big buff monster on you. And we have no idea what this is. We don't know if it was human. We don't know if it killed humans. We don't know if it came from space. We just don't know. It's creepy and it's mysterious and I love it.
Yeah, it freaked me out because like all this time you're kind of riding on a cute bug wave of enemies.
Oh, the Roach Lab was pretty horrifying.
Roach Lab was pretty bad actually. But here I was just like, what am I looking at? Like, and they were so awful and disgusting.
Yeah. It's a shame there was only 3 of them.
Yeah, really. And the eyes was like really freaked me out too. And the hands, it's like a creepy gnarled black hand that drops the monsters on you every time it sees you. Like, God damn, this is crazy. Like, it really like upped the creepiness factor by like 11 when you get to that.
Yeah, and it has no payoff. It's just there to be terrifying. And like you, I mean, it's the Deadlands. It did live up to the name. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's for sure. I really. It's funny because they keep piping up all these areas like, oh, this is the Forsaken Lands. I forgot what the swamp is called, but then you have the desert and what else? The Snake Mouth Cavern and
Metal Island, which isn't played up, but
right.
ends up being like the goal of a lot of quests.
But the Deadlands was like, oh shit, this is like the secret. This is the one you actually have to watch out for. That one is crazy.
Yes. And it's funny going in, it's like, we have no legends of this. We have no idea what's going to be in here.
I really like that aspect, too.
Yes. So, yeah, good range of environments. Like, every new place was very different.
Yeah, and not just the traditional, like, they didn't even have, like, a winter area, really. Like,
they had
a refrigerator, but that was, like, briefly. Yeah. I love the, oh, yeah, and the sandcastle, too. But, yeah, I love it how it's, like, different. You had that foggy area, which I really, like, the Forsaken Lands, which I found fun. The beehive, you just buy in the beehive itself.
It's a factory,
yeah. No, I really like the varied areas and the people that live in there.
And the towns really did feel like towns. Mm-hmm. Like, there's always a challenge in games where there's only so much you can do to make an area feel alive, and I think they did a good job.
I agree. And the termite area was, like, pretty hilarious. I thought overall they're just living underground and
in a very technologically advanced city.
Yeah. So fun. And they had a submarine for them to pilot.
Yes. Yeah, there wasn't really a water area. There was the lake, but there wasn't a water area.
Right.
No water dungeons here.
Nope. Thank goodness.
Oh, God, with all the platforms. I mean, they did have some water.
They had some, like, geysers and things like that, but that's about it.
And let's talk about the music. I don't have much to say on it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not particularly notable. It's there. You don't get tired of the battle music.
Yeah.
I don't think.
I only had to mute it once, and that was at the end of the game when you have to go through that damn fire area. And the music's constantly, like, has this up, this, like, fast-paced, like, intense music, like, on the edge of your seat. But after a while, that just drains you, and there's a lot of course platforming going on there, so I just, like, muted that because, like, I didn't want to hear that anymore. But the other music was fine. It was just, like, perfectly lovely to hear, and did its job. All right, I think that basically covers it.
Yes. There's so much we haven't mentioned. There's a lot of little secrets. So even if you listened all the way through this, it still might be worth experiencing.
There's a lot of little secrets that I enjoy, like trying to find everything. It's definitely well worth your effort to go back and re-explore areas, especially after you get Kabu's boulder smashing ability.
And his burrowing ability.
And V's flying ability, which I love. V basically gets to fly when the queen tells her, like, you need to, like, basically shape up and carry us over. And it's great.
That's one way to power up.
I know, when the queen orders you to do so. I love that. That was great. But yeah, super fun. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to playing this again, like, sometime in the future when I'm, like, want to come down this memory lane. But it basically scratched that Paper Mario itch for me. It gave me a world that I enjoyed, like, learning about. The dialogue is definitely the 100% best thing about this game. The dialogue and the characters. It definitely satisfies that fun, sometimes sarcastic, or lovely, like...
What I will say?
Mm-hmm.
I am going to read more fan fiction because this has given me a mighty need for, one, fluff, and two, so much angst. Kabu and Leaf have so much angst between them that goes unexplored. I will find this.
I know. I'm wondering if the creators will make a sequel to this. I don't know if they will or not.
If they did, I would think different main characters.
I would think so too. These characters have sufficiently found their growth, their development.
And I think they would be very funny supporting characters too.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've done their arc. They've saved the world. It's time for a plucky little dragonfly to go save the world.
Ooh, yeah. I love that dragonfly village, the one by the lake.
Yeah. Speaking of villages that are lively, that one was not.
No, it was not. But it was just, like, a family.
Yeah, the village was a family.
Yeah, it was just basically a family. Oh, I love the spider wizard too.
Yes.
He was great.
Wow. They make, like, allusions to even bigger stuff. Like, again, Bulgaria. Like
the 8 sorcerers of the world.
10.
Oh, 10. Yes, that's 10 right.
10 sorcerers. We only meet one. He's a tarantula, which is crazy because every other arachnid we've met before that has been a monster.
Mm-hmm.
I like him.
Yeah.
He's cool.
He was great. But yeah, so much fun. I love the exploration. I just did so much exploration this game, trying to find all the hidden secrets and everything. And that was very satisfying. Nice game. Packs them to the gills. and it rewards you. Especially since a lot of times you can find quest items before they're even given to you, and that's awesome. I love it when games do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty good game overall. So good work. I love it. Please try it out, please. Sorry. If you're a fan of Paper Mario, please consider
and
supporting
them. Hoping to see more from Moonsprout Games.
Yeah. And as far as them concerning if they did a Paper Mario game, they did. You definitely hit it there. I'm super glad I got to scratch that itch and play a challenging Paper Mario style game, which was just very fun and rewarding for me.
Yes.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed this different episode. We will return.
And if you didn't, how did you make it this far?
Well, I mean, it's just they see the Bug Fables review and they're like, oh, let's see what this is like.
Yeah, but I mean, if there's a point where you're like, oh, man, this is really boring. Like, yeah, you don't listen to the whole thing.
Oh, you're talking about, like, I thought you meant, like, listening to all the episodes and coming up to here by now.
No.
We've definitely gotten a little bit better at being hosts. But we will return back to Teen Titans. Season 4, next episode.
Is that the Raven season?
That's the Raven season.
Hell yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. But, yeah.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, and have a good night.